Could everyone hear? Could you hear? Could all of you hear? Are you able to hear at this time? We have come to a very, very sacred place in Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. The name of this place is Shrikanda. It is spoken of in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, Sri Chaitanya Mangal, and extensively described in the Bhakti Ratnakara by Narahari Chakrabarti. Several of the very great intimate associates, Uparishads, of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda reside here. I would like to briefly describe some of them. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, where the tree of Lord Chaitanya and the various branches of his associates are described, Shrikanda is quite prominent. One person is Mukunda Das. Mukunda Das was royal physician for the Mohammedan king of Bengal. Can they make this softer? Do they have speeds on it? Although we're in a simple, isolated village of Shrikanda, there's more noise than Bombay. This generator generates 10% light and 90% noise. Maybe someone could ask them to move it if it's possible. Mukunda Das, Prabhupada describes one beautiful story of the nature of his ecstatic love for Krishna. He was called by the king to discuss his medical needs. At the time, the king was sitting on a very raised platform, something where they wanted me to sit. He was on a raised platform and he was consulting with Mukunda Das. The sun was beating very hot. So someone, one of the servants of the king, came with a peacock fan to give him shade. As soon as Mukunda Das saw the peacock feathers, he remembered Shamsundar from Vrindavan. And he actually went into a fit of ecstasy and fainted, and fell all the way off the high platform onto the ground. At that time, the king was very much concerned. His doctor may be dead. So the king ran off the platform and came all the way down and found Mukunda Das laying there. And he said, "Are you all right?" And Mukunda Das said, "Oh yes, I am all right." He said, "Well, what happened?" So devotees never speak about their divine ecstasies, except maybe amongst very, very, very intimate, confidential, equal associates. So he didn't say, "I saw the peacock feather, and I thought of Krishna, and I entered into a trance of ecstatic love." Rather, he said, "I have a disease that is something like epilepsy, and sometimes I go into these fits." But the king, just by his association with Mukunda Das, understood he is a very great soul. He figured out in his own mind, a Muslim king, that he must have thought of Krishna seeing that peacock feather and gone into ecstatic love. So he said, "Mukunda Das, why don't you go home today?" So this was the nature of his love. According to Gaur Ganodesh Deepika, Mukunda Das in Krishna's Leela was the gopi named Vrinda Devi. He had a son. His son was named Raghunandan, later to be called Raghunandan Thakur. When Raghunandan was just a small boy, 4 or 5 years old, he had such natural devotion. He was as beautiful as Cupid. He was gentle, well-mannered, compassionate, learned. He was a divine person. In the village, perhaps we'll be able to go there after, there is a temple where Mukunda Das worshipped a deity named Gopinath. Now, every day Mukunda Das would make Rajbhog offering to Gopinath. But one day, the king called for him. So he told Raghunandan, his little son, that you should make the offering on my behalf. "Raghunandan, I don't know how to make offerings to Thakurji." He said, "No, I will tell you." He said, "You just put the plate down, and you chant this mantra, and you ask Gopinath to accept the food, and then he will eat the food. And then you take the plate off and give it to your mother, and she will take care." So that sounds quite simple. So Mukunda Das's wife prepared the Rajbhog, put it on the deity's plate, and gave it to little Raghunandan. He brought it in. He said the mantra, and he prayed, "Gopinath, please eat." He sat there for some time. He saw the food was still on the plate. He said, "Gopinath, please eat. Gopinath, please eat. Gopinath, why are you not eating?" Raghunandan began to weep tears. "I'm so fallen, I'm so lowly, that you will not eat because I'm offering it to you." He had such genuine devotion that he melted Gopinath's heart. And Gopinath spoke to him. He said, "Raghunandan, I already ate. It's all prasad." He said, "Why you say you ate? All the food is still here." He said, "No, that's not the way deity worship runs. You offer and I accept the love and devotion, and I glance upon the food and I eat it with my eyes. And whatever's left is my remnants." Raghunandan said, well, my father told me you would eat. And I don't know all these high philosophies about glancing. All I know is the food is still here. You haven't eaten. And he cried and cried and cried, please eat. So Gopinath came down off his altar and ate everything off the plate. Meanwhile, the offering was taking much, much longer than it was supposed to. And the mother was outside waiting for the prasad. And finally, after a long time, Raghunandan comes off, little five-year-old boy, with an empty plate. Now, you mothers, what would you suspect if that happened in your house? She asked, where is all the prasad? And little Raghunandan said, very happily, Gopinath ate it all. Confirmation. Short time later, Mukunda Das comes home after a hard day's work, sits down, asks his wife, please serve prasad. She said, there is no prasad. He said, what? What do you mean there is no prasad? She said, Raghunandan, your son, was in there for a very long time, and he came off with an empty plate. I think maybe he ate all the food on the altar of the deity. I don't know. But all I know is the plate was empty. Mukundanath Das knew that his son was an extraordinary personality. He called for him. He said, Raghunandan, where's the prasad? Dear father, Gopinath ate everything. He said, please tell me exactly what happened. He said, well, at first, you told me to offer it and he would eat it. At first, he wouldn't eat it. And I started to cry, and I begged him again and again and again for a long time, and finally Gopinath told me all this philosophy that I couldn't understand. And then he came down off the altar, and I saw him. He ate everything. Mukunda Das said, I want you to make another offering the same way. He gave Raghunandan a laddu. Raghunandan came on the altar, offered the laddu, said prayer, said it again, and again. He started to cry. He said, again, Gopinath, you're not accepting my offering. And Gopinath said, I already ate so much just an hour ago. Please accept this laddu. So Gopinath came down and took one big bite out of the laddu and left the rest. But Mukunda Das was secretly watching from a distant place, and he saw the whole thing. Needless to say, he was very, very proud of his son. Such love. So, as things happen in this age, word spreads. Usually bad news spreads a lot faster than good news. But amongst Vaishnavas, actually good news is supposed to spread faster than bad news. So the news spread all around that Gopinath ate all the food from the plate offered by Raghunandan. Now, some distance away, there is a village called Kanakula Krishna Nagar. That is the place of the great Abhiram Thakur. Abhiram Thakur was an intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya, and he was especially assigned by Lord Chaitanya to be one of the prominent preachers who were assisting Nityananda Prabhu in Bengal. There was Abhiram Thakur, Gadadhar Das. These were great persons. Abhiram Thakur was Sridhara, Radharani's brother in Sri Braj Leela. And Gadadhar Das is the incarnation of Srimati Radhikarani's effulgence. And there was Gauri Das Pandit, who was the incarnation of Subal from Krishna's Leela. Such great personalities. Udharandat Thakur. So Abhiram Thakur, he heard the news that Raghunandan offered bhoga with such love that the deity came down from his altar and ate it all. He decided, to this great soul, I want to offer my obeisances. Now the news spread that Abhiram Thakur was coming to offer obeisances to Raghunandan. This created a thunderbolt of fear in the heart of Mukunda Das and his wife, and all the Srikandavasis. Would you like to know the reason why? Abhiram Thakur was very powerful. He had a whip named Jai Mungo, and anyone he touched with that whip would become inundated with love of Krishna. In fact, one time Srinivasacharya went to visit him, and Abhiram Thakur wanted to test Srinivasacharya. He came a long distance, hadn't eaten in a long time. In Kanakula Krishna Nagar, he said, Abhiram told him, you take bath in the river. And then he gave him some bhoga and said, you cook. Cook for yourself, offer to Krishna, and then eat on the side of the river. And he was watching. Hare Krishna. So, Srinivasacharya cooked. And just when he was about to eat, Abhiram Thakur called for some of his disciples and said, go there and meet with Srinivas. I want to see what he does. So they went, and Srinivas immediately offered them all his prasad. And they ate it. And he had nothing. So Abhiram understood he's a Vaishnava. He puts others' needs above his own. He's selfless in his service to other devotees. So he was so pleased when Srinivas came back, he awarded him by taking Jai Mungo. And he hit Srinivas with Jai Mungo. And when he was touched, Srinivas just, his whole body was horripilating. Tears were gushing from his eyes, his hairs were standing on end, he was just screaming out the names of Krishna. Then he hit him again, and his ecstasies intensified. Then he hit him again, and they intensified more. And finally, Abhiram Thakur's wife said, stop, stop, he's only a boy. How much ecstasy can he possibly tolerate? This is the power of Abhiram Thakur. He was the giver of pure bhakti. But he could not tolerate hypocrisy. If he were to offer obeisances to a deity and Krishna was not personally present in that deity to accept the offerings, the deity would immediately crack into hundreds of pieces. If he were to offer obeisances to a Shalagram Shila, if it wasn't a genuine, authorized Shalagram Shila from the Gandaki River, it would just
just burst and crack into powder.
Should I continue?
If he offered obeisances to any human being, if that human being had even the slightest trace of false ego, if that human being had even a particle of a speck of material desire or attachment, upon being offered obeisances by Abhiram Thakur, that person would immediately drop dead. Abhiram Thakur ki. Would you like to exchange obeisances with me? It's the ultimate test. People understand exactly who is who when they came in before Abhiram Thakur. But it's not that he would just go around offering obeisances to people. Only very special personalities. So Mukunda Das and his wife, to them, Mukunda Das was their little boy. Yes, he's quite special, but, you know, we're feeding him, and we've changed his, you know, all of these things a mother and father do for little children. They couldn't conceive that he had no material desires, no ego, no attachments. They were horrified by the thought that this great Acharya was coming to bow to his son. What to do? The news was circulating. He was coming closer, closer, closer. Soon the news was he was just on the outskirts of Srikanda. What are we going to do? We should hide our son so he doesn't see him. What a wonderful plot. They brought him right outside the town, just beyond the town, the village limits, and hid him in some neighbor's house. And Abhiram Thakur came walking right to the home of Mukunda Das. He said, "I have come to visit with your son, Raghunandan." And they spoke with complete honesty. They said, "He's not home. He's out of town for some time." So, of course, you must believe the words of a great Vaishnava. So Abhiram Thakur came right to this place where we are sitting. And he just sat, chanting japa. Chanting, 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 engrossed in ecstatic love. Meanwhile, in the little hiding place of Raghunandan, he heard the news that the great Vaishnav Abhiram Gopal has arrived in Srikanda. And he was so eager for the darshan of this great saint. He came running to this little forest where we're sitting now to meet him. Abhiram Thakur was sitting right where this little shrine is. Raghunandan Thakur saw him and started running to him. When Abhiram saw Raghunandan and Raghunandan saw Abhiram, both of their hearts became inundated with ecstatic love for one another because they were both pure Vaishnavas. Little Raghunandan just ran so blissfully and fell in dandavat pranams right at the lotus feet of Abhiram Thakur, and Abhiram Thakur fell in dandavat obeisances to Raghunandan. And Raghunandan lived. Which was the evidence that there wasn't even the slightest trace of material desire in his heart. when they both got up from offering dandavat, they embraced. When Abhiram Thakur embraced little Raghunandan, tears bathed that little boy like an Abhishekam, tears of love. And the boy bathed Abhiram with tears. And after embracing for a long time, in ecstasy, they loudly were chanting the holy names of Lord Gauranga and dancing. And little Raghunandan was dancing so ecstatically that he was wearing a nupur, that means ankle bracelet. And in the ecstasy of the dance with Abhiram Gopal, that nupur or ankle bracelet broke and flew to another village. And today, where that landed, there's a kund called Nupur Kund to celebrate the ecstatic dance between Abhiram Thakur and Raghunandan Thakur. This is the exact place where they embraced. Can everyone see? I think you're leaning on it, in fact. Mukunda Das had one particular younger brother that it is very significant to discuss. His name was Narahari Sarikar. Narahari Sarikar, a Shrikandavasi, was one of the very, very intimate, personal, loving associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Nagadvip Dham as well as in Jagannath Puri. In fact, we sing about him every night during Gaur Aarti. Narahari Ari Kari Chamaradulaya. That during the Gaur Aarti, Narahari Sarikar is lovingly fanning Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with chamara. That was his special service, to fan the Lord with chamara. And he had a special other unique quality. He wrote beautiful poetry. In Bengal, in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, many of the most popular, heartrending, beautiful songs about Lord Chaitanya and Radha and Krishna were composed by Narahari Sarikar. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of a devotee, wanted to teach the world that no one can become God. We are eternally infinitesimal parts and parcels of Krishna. We are the eternal servants of Krishna. He taught Mayavadi Asya Sunune Hoy Sarvanash, that this Mayavad philosophy will, by hearing it, will ruin one's devotional service. What is the poison of Mayavad philosophy? That they consider that Krishna's body, Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's abode, Krishna's name, they are all incarnations of the Lord in the mode of pure goodness that temporarily are here to help us in this material world. But ultimately, they're Maya, they're temporary, they're illusion. By chanting God's name, we become purified, and in that purified state, we don't need the name anymore. We enter into Brahman, the all-pervading, homogeneous existence of the Absolute, where we become God. I am God, you are God, we are all God. The only thing that keeps us from realizing that is illusion. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu understood that this Mayavad conception insidiously destroys the propensity for real devotion as the eternal loving servant of the Lord. It deprives one of true love, which is the constitutional nature of the soul. So if anyone ever declared he was Krishna, he would hold his ears and say, Vishnu, 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 never, ever, ever equate the living entity to God. Never. Only on rare occasions, such as Mahaprakash, to the most confidential devotees the Lord revealed us. But he would never allow anyone to call him Krishna, except Narahari. He would write songs describing how he's Krishna. He would just write songs describing Krishna's Leela with Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya would hear his songs. That was his special intimate relationship with the Lord. When the Lord was in Jagannath Puri, he loved the inhabitants of Sri Kanda so much that every year during the Rath Yatra, the Lord formed 7 Sankirtan parties. 5 were amongst his associates from Navadvip and Puri. 1 Sankirtan party were the inhabitants of Shantipur, where the lead dancer was Chutananda. Advaitacharya was one of the main 5 dancers. Another was the residents of Kulinagram, and every year, one of the Sankirtan parties was composed of the residents of Sri Kanda. And Narahari Sarakar and his beloved nephew, Raghunandan, were the lead dancers. Every year they would come to Puri. One year, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was giving various instructions to his devotees. He asked Mukunda Das, he said, who is the father and who is the son between you and Raghunandan? That's quite a simple question with a simple answer. Mukunda said, Raghunandan is my father and I am his son, because he is the one that has inspired me in pure devotional service, Krishna consciousness. Lord Chaitanya was very happy to hear this. He said, yes, that is the proper understanding. One who is teaching us and inspiring us on the path of pure love, he is our guru, he is our father. Someone should make that go away. Lord Chaitanya gave 3 instructions to 3 of the devotees of Sri Kanda. He told Mukunda Das, you should earn material and spiritual wealth. Then he turned to Raghunandan and said, you should worship the deity in the temple. To Narahari Sarakar, he said, you should live amongst the devotees and preach. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that Srila Prabhupada explains that these are 3 instructions that Lord Chaitanya gave to different types of devotees. And they are all equally dear to him because they are rendering their service with sincere devotion. Mukunda was a grihastha. He had a wife and children. And he had a profession as a doctor. Lord Chaitanya did not say, this is Maya, give up your profession, give up your family. He said, no. Stay where you are, do what you're doing, and by doing so earn material and spiritual wealth. By living in a spirit of offering everything to Krishna, what is apparently material is actually transformed into spiritual. With his material wealth, he was supporting the Vaishnavas. He was supporting the worship of the deities. And through his sadhana, and through his preaching, he was performing great spiritual activity. So he taught the principle of a grihastha is to earn material and spiritual wealth. And to Raghunandan, to worship the deity, to engage one's body, mind, words, and life in the service of Thakurji, the worshipable Murti in the temple. That is required. It's like we have somewhere here Jananivas Prabhu. Achha, Jananivas Prabhu. You should actually be giving this lecture because you have realization. While we're on this subject, I'm very much going to take the opportunity. The Lord told Raghunandan Thakur, you worship the deity in the temple because it's necessary for loyal, faithful, dedicated pujaris. In fact, whatever the pujari offers, he's actually offering on behalf of the whole temple and the whole congregation. So the pujari should be a very, very simple-hearted and pure person. The deity is a place where people come together to congregate, to worship the Lord. The temple is a place where people come together to be educated and inspired in pure love. So the pujari has a very, very important position. To serve the deities in such a wonderful way that the deities are pleased to bestow their blessings on everyone. And to make the deities and the worship so attractive that devotees will be, their hearts will be inspired. Yes? It's like Radha Kund Prabhu remembers in the early days of ISKCON. Prabhupada wanted devotees distributing books, he wanted devotees preaching, so many activities. But the heart of it all was they would come to the temple and see the deities, and see the beauty of the Lord, and chant and dance in a wonderful temple. And that was, they would become spiritually surcharged by that energy and that association. So the pujari is rendering such a valuable service to everyone. He's watering the root of the tree. In Vrindavan, when in 1977, Prabhupada was in his last weeks of his earthly leela. And one day he told his secretary, call the pujari. The pujari at that time was a French devotee named Omkar. This was in the middle of the night at about 1 a.m. And Omkar was just sleeping in some hallway somewhere. So people were just running around looking, and they woke him up. Prabhupada wants to, Prabhupada wants to see you immediately. So he got up and he just washed his face and he ran down to Prabhupada's quarters, and Prabhupada was laying in his bed, and he offered his pranams, his dandavat, and got up, and Prabhupada looked at him and smiled and said, of all the devotees, the pujari is the most fortunate because he is so close to Krishna. Prabhupada established a preaching mission the pujaris, even the cooks, are very much the heart of the preaching mission, because they're nourishing all the preachers by their service. And today we have the most exalted, effulgent, pure-hearted of all pujaris. We have a couple, actually. We have Ramesh Chandra Goswami. Please stand up. And Sushil Kumar Goswami. Where is Sushil? Please stand. They are... Where? Stand, please. They are head pujaris for Nanda Bhavan. The main... No, just control for a moment. Nanda Bhavan is the main temple of Nandagaon. The actual spot on the top of Nandeshwar Hill where Krishna and Balaram eternally reside. And these two special souls, Goswamis, have been worshipping the deities up there for their whole lives. Let us welcome them to our yatra. We're so happy. They are genuine Brijabasis. What we read about in the scriptures, those kind of Brijabasis. Humble, sincere, they love Krishna. Never find fault with anyone. Love to serve Vaishnavas. Wonderful devotees. And we're so deeply honored and grateful that they have come to honor us with their very sacred presence during our yatra. We also have His Grace, Sripad Jananivas Prabhu. In about, 1971? 1972. He came to Sri Mayapur Dham and was made the head pujari. When Sri Radha Madhav was living in that thatched hut, and there was nothing else on the whole land at the time, just the thatched hut. Prabhupada lived in the hut, the deities were there, and then when Prabhupada left, the deities were put in the care of Jananivas Prabhu. Now, it might sound very nectarine. When Prabhupada was here, it was very nectarine. But when Prabhupada left, everyone went with him. Because at that time, it was just a swampy rice paddy. There was no devotees. I mean, there was some Gaudiya Math some distances away, but it was very austere, very simple. And during the monsoons, there was vipers and cobras and all kinds of poisonous snakes just flowing right into the temple, right into the hut. They had to go on the top roof. Yes? Very difficult. Practically everybody left except Jananivas Prabhu. In the history of Mayapur, there has been raids by Muslims where people's legs were blown off, people were killed. Vast floods. Jananivas Prabhu, for the past 31 years, never for even a moment considered giving up his service to the deities. Prabhupada, like Raghunandan Thakur, ordered him, worship the deities. Okay. Thank you. So, yes, Jananivas Prabhu, On many occasions, Prabhupada exclaimed about he and his brother, Shripad Pankajangari Prabhu, that they were completely transcendental personalities, beyond sannyasis. Pure, perfect brahmacharis, whose life and soul is simply worshipping the deities. And actually, preachers, book distributors, and all kinds of congregational devotees from all over the world are nourished with faith and hope and inspiration by these two great souls who just remain in Mayapur, humbly offering their loving service to Sri Radha Madhava. Let us welcome Janani Vas Prabhu. I'm sorry, but the class is spontaneously becoming longer than planned. He told Narahari that you should live in the association of devotees and preach. So there must be preachers who are giving their lives and soul to promote the message of Harinam Kirtan and Prema Bhakti. There must be pujaris who are nourishing everyone by their loving service to the deities. And there must be grihasthas who are facilitating everything by earning material and spiritual wealth. This is how Lord Chaitanya taught the entire world through the residence of Shikanda. One very great disciple of Narahari Sarakar was Raghunandan Thakur. Another was Lochan Das Thakur. This morning at Madhai Thio, we sang two beautiful songs that he composed. One of his great literary contributions was he is the author of Sri Chaitanya Mangal, one of the three most important authorized biographies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There is Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, and Sri Chaitanya Mangal. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had it printed and circulated in the Bengali language. Lochan Das Thakur received the knowledge, the information, the realization, and the grace required to write that book from his guru, Narahari Sarakar, who explained to him in great detail what he personally saw and heard of in the Leela of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And where we are sitting, just here, there's a beautiful shrine. It is said that this is the place where Lochan Das Thakur had written the great literary epic, Sri Chaitanya Mangal. So please, before leaving, come and have darshan of this very, very holy place. There's a very interesting story of Lochan Das Thakur. He was from a village not far from here. And as was the custom, he was married when he was about 4 or 5 years old, something like that. Sometimes they do that in Bengal, in the olden days. He was married when he was just like 5, 6 years old. And the idea is you get married, but you don't live with the wife, because you don't know what to do at that time. The contract is made, so the wife knows she has a husband, and the husband knows he has a wife. And then they just go and live with their parents until they actually grow up, until they're maybe 16, 17 years old. And then they start actually meeting regularly and so forth. Anyways, when he was just a small child, He came to Sri Kanda and accepted Narahari as his guru and was living as a brahmachari, serving his guru, learning all about the leelas of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, rendering menial services to the deities. He was here for many years, and he never went back home. He had no interest in going back home. He probably didn't even remember that he was married. But the father of that girl, he remembered. The girl didn't remember much, and he didn't remember, but the father remembered. Because he's maintaining the girl. So he sent a message to Narahari Sarakar and said, you know, your disciple, Lochandas, he's married to my daughter. This happened a long time ago, but still he has responsibility to take care of her. So Narahari Sarakar said, you should go and you should meet them. So he went to the village, and he didn't remember what the village was like. So when he got to the village, there was a place where there was this young lady drawing water from a well. And he asked, where is this particular house I'm looking for, my dear mother? He said, Mataji, where is this house? She said, that's the house. So he went to the house and he met the father. And he said, well, your wife, who you haven't seen in a long time, she's not home yet, but she'll be home in a few minutes. And a few minutes later, the father brings in the girl that gave him directions. Obviously, neither of them recognized each other. So she came in, and Lochandas Thakur said, I've already accepted her in my heart as my mother. When I address someone as mother, I accept them in my heart as my mother. I can't be married to my mother. He actually convinced them. And received their blessings to go back to his guru's ashram. So this is the bhajan stali of Sri Lochandas Thakur, one of the great residents of Sri Kanda. There was one very, very learned scholar that lived here. He was a very simple man. His name was Damodar Sen Kaviraj. He was humble. He was just a very simple person, but very learned in the scriptures. So there was this Digvijay Pandit who was traveling around with his patra, where you had to sign your name if you were defeated. And he came to Sri Kanda, and he was boasting very arrogantly. And he heard that this Damodar Sen was very learned, so he challenged him. Damodar Sen wasn't interested. But he was practically, by social pressure, he was forced to debate him. And he completely defeated the Digvijay. This was absolutely humiliating. The Digvijay, he was just a young man. The Digvijay cursed him. He cursed him. You will never have a son because you have humiliated me. Hare Krishna. So grihasthas, they like to have sons. At least that's what I've heard. So he fell at the feet of this Digvijay Pandit and said, well, I didn't want to defeat you. You challenged, I didn't want to humiliate you. I said, please, why have you done this? Now I can't have a son? That's a horrible curse. And he fell at the feet and he served that Digvijay Pandit very nicely and said, please, give me a blessing. He said, all right, I will give you a blessing. said, "You will not have a son, but you will have a daughter. And she will get married, and your grandsons will be two of the greatest saints of all time." So he had a daughter. Damodar Sen's daughter's name was Sunanda. When she came of marriageable age, he was looking for a person who was suitable to her in disposition. They lived here in Srikhanda. She was very beautiful, very pure in heart. She was like a goddess. There was someone who lived in a village not far. His name was Chiranjeevan. And Damodar Sen proposed to him to marry his daughter. So they were married. And Chiranjeevan moved here to Srikhanda, where he lived with his wife Sunanda. Their firstborn son's name was Ramchandra. And their youngest son was named Govinda. Now, I can speak for the rest of the night about these two personalities. But I promised you we'd get back before 3 a.m. tonight. Such great persons. Ramchandra became one of the foremost intimate disciples of Srinivasacharya. Srinivasacharya lived just close by in Jajigram. In fact, all the buses passed the house of Srinivasacharya in Jajigram on the way here a few minutes ago. That was his base. Ramchandra Kaviraj, the story, he was getting married, yes? And the marriage procession happened to pass by Srinivasacharya, who was doing bhajan. And he preached to Ramchandra Kaviraj about Braj Bhakti. And Ramchandra Kaviraj accepted initiation and became a very, very great disciple. Very, very great disciple. Later on, Srinivasacharya brought Ramchandra to Vrindavan and sing his poetic abilities and his pure unalloyed love. Srila Jiva Goswami personally awarded him the name Ramchandra Kaviraj. And the younger brother, this is a very wonderful story. Govinda, I'm not going to tell the story. Govinda was his younger brother. He later on also got initiated and became a follower of Srinivasacharya. Jiva Goswami, hearing his incredible, beautiful poetry, wonderful poetry, beautiful bhajans and kirtans he would write, was given the name Govinda Kaviraj. They are both inhabitants of Srikhanda. Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur, they were in the generation after Lord Chaitanya and his immediate associates. They would regularly come to Srikhanda. There's hundreds of references to Srikhanda in the life histories of Narottam and Srinivas. Why did they come here? For the friendship of Raghunandan Thakur and for shiksha and blessings from Narahari Sarakar. They both considered Narahari prominent shiksha gurus in their life. They loved him and served him with their hearts and souls. So you can imagine what an exalted position he had, that these were the kind of disciples that were traveling distances for his instructions and blessings. I'm going to end our katha tonight with one very nice story that took place here. I was seeing if there was anything else, but I shouldn't do anything else. Better I don't look. After Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu disappeared from the earthly vision of the inhabitants of this planet,